Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
All right, Dolphins fans, it's another episode, Unsquish the Fish. What's going on today? I got a special guest for you from FinManiacs.com, Lewis Sung, the Assistant Director of Content and Production. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Ron.
Hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. I kind of like how this started. I was talking with somebody on Twitter, and then I know that you saw it, so me and you kind of go in some back and forth, and we were just talking about that O-line a lot, and then we decided, hey, let's do a show. That's what I got this show here for, man, so we don't have to try and say everything we want to say in 140 characters.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing with Twitter is that you really can't get your point across in just 140 characters. You need some time to talk about it.
Heck yeah. So I invited you on. I've invited others on, too, and a lot of times people decline for whatever reason, but you jumped on the chance, which was awesome.
I'm always willing to talk Dolphins football.
Okay, great, man. Hey, before we get started, tell us a little bit about FinManiacs.com, what you do.
Well, what we do here at FinManiacs.com is that we're pretty much looking to rise above the regular title of a fan site. We're always trying to get out the news as it happens. If we see something that looks interesting, or even if it's not interesting, but it is Dolphins news, we're going to put it up there so that somebody's going to want to read it. So we kind of do that. And we also have the privilege of being able to cover the Miami Dolphins community service events. So like whenever they go out to give back to the community, like very recently, they held a 7-on-7 tournament, their 8th annual one. And I was able to interview Jelani Jenkins and Lamar Miller, and they talked about the event, and it was a really great experience. I really enjoyed it, and whenever I get a chance to go out to cover the events, I'll write a story up on it, and it's really been a great experience to be able to be with the Dolphins organization, just watching all the stuff that they do. That's something that I've kind of take that to be my mission, because a lot of people think that the Dolphins organization is bad, Stephen Ross is a terrible owner, and all that, all there's nasty stuff because the Dolphins don't win. But a lot of people don't realize exactly how involved the Miami Dolphins are in the community. I have learned over the past year and a half that the question is not so much what do the Dolphins do in the community, rather the question is what don't the Dolphins do in the community. They have a hand in pretty much everything that goes on in South Florida.
That's awesome, man. The 7-on-7 tournament you mentioned, was that the one that I was listening on FinSiders, I believe. It was Troy Drayton talked about his involvement with that. Did I have that correct?
That is one and the same.
Okay, cool. That's awesome that you got to be there, man. All right, let's get straight into this. You and I were going back and forth on Twitter, and I don't get into a lot of Twitter battles too much because I don't tweet as much as I probably should with the O-line. I am huge on wanting to get Mathis to upgrade this O-line. You are less so. Don't see it as much of an important thing like I do.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that, but go ahead.
How comfortable are you with the, say, four guys that are going to man the two guard spots we got?
Okay, well, if we're going to talk Billy Turner and Dallas Thomas, and this is basically where the discussion kicks in again, is that I am of the propensity that I would love to have Evan Mathis, and again, it's not so much that I don't think it's a big deal. I think it would be a very big deal that we sign Evan Mathis, and it would instantly make us, in my mind, a playoff contender because we finally fixed the one thing that needed more fixing than anything else, the offensive line. But again, I try not to overreact to things. That I'm trying not to freak out if Mathis does not come on, because I see all the other improvements the Dolphins have made, and I think we can still make a battle of it. But for the offseason that we have had, Mathis would be just the cherry on top, because that would make it like pretty much a perfect offseason in my mind. Now, as for your actual question, if we're talking about confidence level in Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner, then I am much more confident in Billy Turner than I am in Dallas Thomas, because the simple fact of the matter is Dallas Thomas has lost his starting job each time he's been given to him. He always starts OTAs and mini camps as the starting guy, and then as training camp wears on and the actual hitting starts, Thomas slowly goes down the depth chart back to where he belongs as a backup, and hopefully a backup's backup, because truth be told, Thomas is not very good at what he does. Now, if we're talking about Billy Turner, that's a different story. I'm not worried about hearing that Jeff Linkenbach is getting first team snaps over he is, because again, and this is pretty much where the basis of our discussion was on Twitter, is that training camp is when the pads come on and people actually start hitting each other. This is where Billy Turner really gets to shine, because this whole time the one thing that people have been saying about Billy Turner has nothing to do with his strength or his brutality on the offensive line. His issue has been his hands, his technique, his footwork, but what he makes up for that in is his brute strength, which he cannot use yet because we haven't actually started hitting yet. And that's why I've said very, very clearly is that you can't make an actual judgment on the offensive line until they start hitting each other. You can't say this guy will be our starter going forward, end of discussion, until you get to see what they're doing when they're actually hitting each other like they're going to be doing in the actual games. What they're doing now, they're practicing footwork, they're practicing hand technique. All of that stuff is the one thing that Billy Turner did not get right. He makes up for it with his brute strength, which I am confident he will show in training camp, and that is when he'll lock down the right guard spot. Left guard, I don't know who's going to go there. It better not be Dallas Thomas.
Well, and this is where I know we can't make any definite decisions right now because the pads aren't on, but here's where I can make decisions off what I see. I see them taking four guys and rotating them in two different positions and not for the life of us making up their mind on what they want to do on either side, even with Billy Turner, which makes me even more nervous because I actually went into this OTA minicamp 9-week period thinking that Billy Turner was going to be the right guard, and I wasn't going to think twice about it, and it was all about can we get two or what ended up being three guys between Douglas, Linkenbach, and Thomas. Can one of those guys shine in the left guard spot? Now, I mean, with all the switching around they're doing, I'm wondering, are they sold on Billy Turner? Are they just, what are they doing? They don't seem very confident in these four guys. They're just rotating around trying to see what happens.
Well, the rotating happens pretty much every year. They're always trying to see, okay, let's see what this looks like. Let's see what this looks like. That's just the way Joe Philbin coaches. I don't agree with it necessarily, but that's just the way it is. My mentality is simply this. I understand what they're doing. They're trying to see who would work better where. And again, since this is just OTAs and minicamp, you can't really make a true decision because they haven't been able to actually use what is their offensive line's greatest strength, and that is literally their strength. Billy Turner is a mauler. He'll push you around. He'll push you out of his way, but he's not going to beat you with hand technique and footwork like some kind of you would think he's a tap dancer. He doesn't have to do – that's not what he's good at. He's good at pushing you out of his way with his brute strength, which he will get to employ in training camp. Now, if you're referring to what they're doing right now, this is just my guess, my speculation, is that they're trying to see who has the best footwork. I'm going to immediately assume now that Linkenbach has shown better overall technique than Billy Turner has. But again, since training camp hasn't started, they haven't put the pads on. And that is when Turner will get to make sure that he's saying, hey, look, he may have better footwork than me, but can he move people out of the way like I can? That's the thing that is going to make sure that he gets the starting right guard spot. If it's left guard, I honestly have no idea, and that's why I think Mathis is an important signing if it happens.
Can we go into the season not really knowing? I mean, can we go into the season just settling? I mean, because Dallas Thomas has lost his job many times, but it wasn't because somebody else just shined big. It was because he just wasn't very good, and they had to put somebody else in there. I mean, each time we've either had to go and sign – a lot of times we just had to go sign like a second-tier vet, and you had mentioned something about beyond Mathis, other options. I mean, what else is out there? What kind of Darren College-type player is out there that could come in and fill a guard spot for us beyond Mathis?
Well, there very recently, and I just wrote an article about this on the website earlier this morning, John Moffitt formerly the Denver Broncos, recently came out of retirement, and he's looking to give himself a shot to prove himself. He started as a rookie for the Seattle Seahawks, and I mean, if he can show that, hey, he's back. I understand that he has a lot of off-the-field issues. He had drug problems. He was getting in trouble with the law. But that was the whole point of why he went into rehab and started working out with Jay Glazer of Fox Sports. He went and got his life together, and now he's back to try again. And Glazer said that he's very confident that Moffitt will be a starter again in the league once people realize Moffitt is there to stay. I haven't actually seen him in action personally, but from the general consensus that Moffitt is very talented and he has a lot to offer, but it's basically just pretty much taking a chance on a guy that you don't know if his off the field stuff is in order. On the field, he should be pretty good. Off is a different story. So it's really a matter of, are you willing to take that risk on a guy who went through so much trouble to get his life back together? And if it's not Mathis, then I'd be willing to give it a shot with him.
Anyone else? Any other names you're aware of?
Well, somebody – it's actually pretty interesting because Gil Brandt of the NFL Network actually brought up the idea of Jake Long moving to left guard and maybe extending his career a little bit.
I thought that in my head in the past, this offseason. I was almost surprised he didn't try and go do it, but I don't know how beat he is, how beat his body is.
Well, that's the thing is that if the thing I have is that Long is a very powerful person. His talent was never the issue, never the issue. His issue has always been he can't stay healthy. He keeps getting beat up. He's smacked around. He's always hurt all the time. But at left tackle, that's a very important position, and he couldn't hold that up. But as a left guard, maybe he wouldn't have to worry so much, and it's not like we lost Brandon Albert again. I don't know if the issue, I don't know if maybe Long's pride would not allow him to come back into Miami and be a guard as opposed to his old left tackle position. But if I were Long, I would just think, you know what, my career's not going to last much longer. I should take what I can and see if he can get into the left guard spot. Because as a left tackle, you really can't trust him. But if you're going to try and put him at guard, then I would think otherwise.
Yeah, we didn't necessarily get rid of him for any other reason beyond that he wanted way more money than we were willing to pay him because we knew he was breaking down. And St. Louis mistakenly, and I knew the second they did it, it was a mistake to pay him the money they did. He wasn't worth it simply for the fact that he can't stay healthy. I'd love to see him come back and play guard. I think he would be an upgrade at the left guard position for us for sure.
That's my mentality. There are at least three guys that I think would be an immediate upgrade, and that's Long, Moffitt, and of course Mathis, who's the elite left guard that we've been needing. But and if we want to go back to the original Dallas Thomas point, I'm not surprised at all that Thomas has been able to keep his job so far because again, hitting hasn't started. Thomas gets pushed around. He doesn't necessarily get techniqued around. He's not that strong. He as opposed to his the people he's going up against. So this is why I said you can't choose who your starter is going to be until you actually get to see all the aspects of what an offensive lineman has to do. You can't just look at footwork and technique and say, well, I guess that's our guy. Nope, because he may have the best footwork and technique in the world, but he might get pushed around by somebody who's just playing stronger than he is. And that's why I think that Billy Turner hasn't locked down the spot yet. He hasn't been able to use his greatest asset.
Okay, yeah, I'm less concerned about Turner, even though he didn't get to play much last year, and a lot of that was due to some early injury. He pretty much suffered, I believe it was in last offseason, correct? He suffered an injury
Yes, he got a turf toe injury and he was pretty much left out of the loop for a very long time. Although in games where he did get to play, he did a pretty good job. But this is the Philbin aspect of it again. Is that Philbin likes for people to be clean. He likes every time he talked about Billy Turner, he talked about his technique, his footwork, the way his hands move. It's not so much his strength or anything like that. He just wanted Turner to get cleaner.
Okay. All right. Well, when we open training camp, if you had to take your guess, do you think in these players we mentioned, Moffitt or Long, or maybe there's even a couple other guys out there, I could see us in the past, what we normally do is the day training camp opens, maybe like the day before the players kind of report, that's when we'll go try these guys out usually. You see us, if you had to take a guess, you see us doing that or you see us just opening training camp and they're going to give Dallas Thomas a fourth try at the left guard spot?
Well, Philbin loves him some Dallas Thomas. I don't know why. Probably because he's a versatile player, but at least he seems to be sticking in one spot for the moment. He's paying attention to just where he needs to be, left guard. But my guess would be that going into training camp, Dallas Thomas is going to be the one who's going to get the first team snaps. But I don't really think that matters because I don't think it'll take long for him to get overtaken by somebody else, whether it's Linkenbach, Walton, Douglas or somebody else like that. Thomas has not proven that he's good. And unless somehow some miracle happens and he pulls an Evan Mathis, because Evan Mathis is elite now. He is elite now. But when he started out, he really wasn't that good, and he bounced around a lot of teams. It took a while for him to finally blossom into who he is today.
Including our team, right?
He was with the Dolphins for a little while, and he honestly was not that impressive. He didn't manage to beat out anybody, so he wound up moving on. But he became, eventually, elite. So I don't know if maybe that's what we're waiting for with Dallas Thomas. Maybe I don't have that kind of patience. Maybe there's something, they see something in him that I don't. But all I know is that right now, Thomas doesn't look very promising, and in a couple of years, maybe he'll be an elite guard, and we'll be kicking ourselves because we did it again.
I don't know. Somehow on that one, I kind of doubt it. Now, do we play the Bucks again this preseason? We do, correct?
I believe we do, because I believe we're going to be talking about the whole Jameis Winston aspect of it again. I believe one of the narratives that was going around is that Jameis Winston was going to be a winner and he was going to immediately make the Buccaneers as a playoff team because they have Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson and Austin Seferian Jenkins. And I mean, that's the mentality that they're having. I believe, yes, they're going to be, we'll be playing the Dolphins. Yes.
Okay. The reason I asked about that is because last year, remember, Dallas Thomas was also the talk of the offseason last year about how he was going to come in. He was so much better. Philbin was just loving some Dallas Thomas. They played the Bucks, and I know it was Gerald McCoy, and I understand Gerald McCoy is probably about 85% of a Sioux, but man, he just had he couldn't stop McCoy on one play. Every single play, he was just pushing Dallas Thomas out of the way like a rag doll. And I believe that was at the right guard spot, if I'm not mistaken, because I think they had College playing left guard. So I'm curious to see if those two match up again and Thomas is there. That'd be a nice little test. Does that happen again? I think that'll tell us everything we need to know by that point, because it told us last year that there was a problem.
Well, we'll know as soon as training camp starts, because we don't need to test out Dallas Thomas against Gerald McCoy because
we've got Sue. That's a good point.
So it's like and even before that, I mean, If we look back, one thing that people always talked about is how nasty and mean Randy Starks was in training camp, and he would be the real tester for the offensive guards. And even Randy Starks made Dallas Thomas look like a fool. So it's really a matter of how bad is he going to? It's not even a matter of is he going to be able to stop Sue. Is that can he even survive against Sue? I'm not expecting him to do well. And in fact, I'm expecting pretty much everybody who goes up against Sue to flunk pretty badly because he's Ndamukong Sue. That's kind of what he does. So it's a matter of how many times they hit the ground once Sue starts actually hitting people.
I guess we're gonna see, man. All right, hey, let's move away from the O line. Actually, before I do that, I just want to get your final point. So you want us to sign Mathis, but right, you're saying you don't feel it's as urgent a thing because of who's on the squad right now or because of some of these other options that we could go get if we needed to. Which one is it that makes you feel more comfortable?
Well, I guess I'll ask for clarification. Exactly what is it that you mean when I say when you're saying I don't think it's that urgent? I mean, urgent to what?
Yeah, I think you were kind of in the camp of not really feeling like we need to sign Mathis or we're going to be in trouble because Tannehill's going to be on his back every other play. That isn't necessarily how you're feeling about it.
Well, I do. If Mathis does not sign, I will say that I'm not going to be really happy about it because we still don't have somebody to lock down that left guard spot. But I have faith in Billy Turner at right guard. I like Juwan James at right. I like Pouncey in the middle. And I'm hoping against hope that Brandon Albert is ready for game one at left tackle. So that means there's only one guy who is not really all that great. So my mentality of it is this. If Tannehill has managed to improve each year, even while being on his back pretty much every single play, And now we have built an offense that is specifically built to cater to his strengths and hide his weaknesses, unlike what we had last season and the season before that. Then my mentality is this, is that even if the offensive line status is still the same, Tannehill will get better, and I think we have a decent shot at making the playoffs because the weapons that Tannehill has is now built around what he's good at. He's not good at the deep ball, I will openly admit that, but having help from guys like Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Greg Jennings, and Jordan Cameron, who I'm hoping will stay healthy and we won't have to face a similar Dustin Keller issue again.
I know, but that was really a freak thing. I mean, that bash to the knee he suffered was just horrible. Any player's knee would have been blown out on that hit.
Yeah, you know who's playing for Tampa Bay right now?
Who?
DJ Swearinger.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So I'm hoping he doesn't take out Cameron's knees, too.
Yeah, let's see. Of course, with Cameron, we concern more about does he take a shot to the head than his knees. But
well, maybe he will take it. Maybe Swearinger will aim for his head. He likes to hit people.
That's true. Hey, man, let's move it to the linebacking core because that's something I haven't talked about much since doing this show. How are you feeling about the core? What are your thoughts on the battle for the unclaimed spot in the linebacking unit?
Okay, well, the SLB spot, I think, honestly, I don't think there's much of a battle as people are wanting to make it out to be. I think that Chris McCain has that pretty locked down. Because if you look at the guy who had it before McCain is at the starting shot, you had Philip Wheeler. Somehow, Philip Wheeler managed to have that job and keep that job. I don't know how, but he did. And he only did really one thing well, and that was pass rush. McCain is a better pass rusher overall. He's younger than Wheeler. He has more potential than Wheeler, and he's also bigger than Wheeler. So I picture McCain right now as possibly being what Deion Jordan was supposed to be. Now, McCain, I think, is a better pass rusher than Deion Jordan, but Jordan had the ability to cover better than McCain does. So if we're going to look at it this way, I picture that last spot as pretty much being held down by a better version of a Philip Wheeler. Really good at pass rushing, not necessarily that great at covering tight ends and stuff, but I haven't gotten to see McCain do that yet after in year two, so I'm not sure if he's improved on that or not. I know that he's getting to work at defensive end at the speed package, so he'll be doing a lot of pass rushing, and that's honestly something I don't have a problem with. The WLB spot is obviously picked up by Jelani Jenkins. He's got it handled. He's going to do what he does. And the middle, if it's Koamisi, then it should be okay. He did okay at that spot last year, and now this year, I can't look at it in a vacuum. I have to analyze the entire defense when I'm talking about any position on the defense. Really, Koamisi and all the linebackers and all the corners and all the secondary are going to greatly benefit from the fact that we now have Ndamukong Suh. The biggest issue that we had last year, ironically enough, was not covering tight ends and stuff like that. It was actually stopping the run.
And
Ndamukong Suh takes care of that issue. And now we signed C.J. Mosley. Supposedly they work well together. They're going to be able to stop the run together. So that makes Misi's job easier. It makes Jenkins' job easier. It makes McCain's job easier. So any weaknesses that certain players in the defense might have gets to be hidden a lot because we have an elite defensive tackle. And, of course, we have Cameron Wake on one end and Vernon on the other end. So that defensive line, just that unit as a whole, is going to make the entire defense better and mask the fact that we may have weaknesses in other areas. So the linebacking core, again, I'm not really that concerned about it. I would have wanted Denzel Perryman or Eric Kendricks or somebody like that. The Dolphins decided to invest further into their D-line, and if that's the – but by doing that, I feel like they've started to build some sort of identity for themselves. They've decided that we are going to be a mauling, brawling, bruiser defensive line team with a good secondary, and they put a lot of effort into the wide receiver core, so now they're not Mike Wallace go deep, or rather Mike Wallace not go deep because they couldn't connect. Now they have receivers who are high catch radius, can get yards after the catch, so you kind of see this identity starting to be built. They're working on their defensive line? Fine, that's fine. because now by doing that, they've made everybody else's job easier. So going into the season, I expect the starting linebackers to be Jenkins, Meese, and Chris McCain, with some Calvin Shepard thrown in every once in a while for good measure.
You had also said if and I don't know if you meant it. You said if Koemisi is a middle linebacker. So if he's not, who else would be?
Well, we have the three undrafted linebackers. We got Zach Vigil, Mike Hull, and Jeff Luck. So, or is it Luke? I don't know.
I've heard it pronounced both ways, but I've never heard him actually pronounce it. I've heard some good things about Vigil. I've heard him that he's coming on. Because I can't imagine all three of those guys make even the 53. So somebody's bound to shine and somebody's bound to fall off. What are your thoughts on that? What about out of the three guys, who do you see not necessarily taking the starting job, because I really think it's Meese's to take no matter what, but playing some important snaps for us this season perhaps?
Well, I haven't been able to watch him personally, and again, since hitting hasn't started, there's no really – real way to tell anything yet. This is all pretty much just warming up for the real deal. But from what from the reports that have come out of the OTAs and the mini camp from the members of the media, it seems that Vigil seems to be putting himself on top of the other two. But maybe when the actual hitting and scrimmaging starts, one of the others will put himself above Vigil in a way. I don't know. I only said if Meese because they're making that possible distinction that maybe Meese's not going to be the middle linebacker. Maybe somebody beats him. Maybe Calvin Shepard somehow shows that he's better at middle linebacker than Meese is and lets Meese go to the outside because they like him better than McCain. But I honestly expect Meese to wind up being the middle linebacker. I only say if because there is currently three guys who are wanting that spot.
So if Meese were to go to, and again, we're just theorizing, it is the off season, so we got 5 weeks to play around with it. If Meese did go to the outside, Shepard plays middle, who sits, Jenkins or McCain?
McCain, no question.
Okay, and he comes in more in the speed package, comes in a little bit more situationally, kind of
right.
Like Deion Jordan did last year,
right.
Even though it's a bit of a different position. Now, I've heard them playing McCain at defensive end in certain packages a lot during this mini camp.
Right.
But again, it's mini camp, and you, like you said, Philbin likes to play around with everything, just see what's what, throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks.
Right. That's the thing that it is. McCain, I mentioned that McCain was playing at defensive end in the speed packages. That's what McCain is good at. He's good at rushing the passer. That is what his specialty is. That was what he made himself, and that's what he made a name for himself doing. Like in week one, we saw this kid flashing out of nowhere, Chris McCain, knocking people down, and like, whoa, where did this guy come from? And then for some reason, he just kind of disappeared. Recently, a report came out that McCain admitted he didn't study the playbook enough, and I guess maybe that's why Philbin kept him out of games, because he didn't study enough. And you know what? That's just Philbin wanting his discipline. I'm not going to begrudge him for that just yet, except for the fact that I would have put out my best players, not Philip Wheeler, even if McCain didn't study the playbook. But
he admitted so. I mean, McCain has admitted that he didn't get into the books like he was supposed to in
right.
the past, anyway, last year.
Right. So if Meese moves to the outside, then I fully expect McCain to be the one who gets sat down, because Jenkins has proven that he has the ability to cover and he manages, and he's very instinctual. McCain's strength lies more in rushing the passer. So again, yeah, he would be playing that Deion Jordan role, and if he somehow manages to learn how to cover, then by all intents and purposes, we have an elite linebacker in Chris McCain. He already knows how to rush the passer. If he learns how to cover, there'd be no stopping that kid.
What about his setting? What about setting the edge? What about, you know, getting the runner on the outside? How do we feel his strength? Does he have a strength there, an opportunity? Like, how does he do there?
Well, that's something that he needed to improve on in the last season. And McCain's role back last year was pretty much rush the passer, knock down the quarterback. I think that's something that – I think what he's working on right now is pretty much trying to set the edge, trying to work on his run defense and pass coverage. If I'm Coach Philbin, I'm working on the two aspects of McCain's game that are already not good. We already know he knows how to knock down quarterbacks. He needs to work on everything else, because Philbin likes well-rounded people. I don't think he likes specialty guys. I don't think he likes people who are really good at one thing and then they're bad at everything else. He wants people who are good at everything. And if McCain manages to get good at covering and run defense, he still has his elite pass rushing skills. So that would make him a really good linebacker.
But guys are always going to be better at some things than other things. Do you think sometimes players focus so much on the things they don't do well that they still don't work on the things they do well? Because you still have to work on it, and they lose a little bit of that. And then they just become a mediocre average player and don't really give you impact plays at any part, at any time of the game or any situation. I always get concerned about trying to make everybody so well-rounded that you just got a lot of kind of mediocre, somewhat okay, good guys, and nobody's really great or playing great in moments.
Well, if you're really good at something, and this is just me speculating, if you are really good at something, it kind of takes a lot to just kind of forget how to do that. That would be like Dan Marino trying to learn how to run with the football, and as a result, he forgot how to throw it as well as he did.
That's a good point.
So if McCain's already really good at rushing the passer, I can't imagine that working on his coverage and run defense is going to mess with how aggressive he is. But the reason I brought up specialty is that you see guys like McCain, and last year he struggled in pass coverage and run defense. We knew he could rush the passer, but that made him a liability in other things, and that could be taken advantage of. What the Patriots do at their absolute best? They nitpick and they pick away at other teams' weaknesses. They don't look to just use their strength. The Patriots are not a team that are like, we are really good at this and we're going to do this. What they are going to do is they're going to notice and look at, let's see, where's your weakest link? Where are we going to attack you?
Philip Wheeler. They went at that guy every time when he was on the field. They had to take him off.
Right. That's what they do. So McCain last year was pretty much strictly a pass rusher. If he was out covering, he might as well have been Philip Wheeler again, and he could easily be attacked by people like Brady and Rodgers, who know how to find the weak points of a defense. That's what it is. That's what it is that makes quarterbacks like them so dangerous and manage to play for so long. It's not that they have incredibly powerful arms or they just know they're just plain accurate as all get out. They know where to go with the football. Their brains are what keeps them in the game. Peyton Manning's arm is pretty much fried, and yet he's still considered an elite quarterback because he knows where to go, he knows where to go with the football and when. So that's what makes him an elite quarterback, and that's why having well-rounded players is important. But at the same time, you have to kind of scheme your way into using specialty players. I understand Philbin not wanting to use them because he'd rather have guys he can count on all the time. But for a guy like McCain, I fear that if he doesn't learn how to do all that other stuff that he's not good at, then we're going to basically be having another Philip Wheeler moment. If he learns how to do the other stuff, then we will have an elite linebacker because this kid has incredible pass rushing skills. If he can learn how to do the other stuff, then everybody needs to watch out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm very excited, and I'm on record as saying, I think from the first episode I ever did of this show, I'm on record as saying I'm extremely excited about McCain and what he can bring to this defense. I hope that he can get those things figured out at least well enough to be able to stay on the field and not be a liability. Let's move on to the cornerback spot, and specifically that, I don't know if it's a battle or that competition for the spot opposite Grimes. So what's your thoughts on that?
I love me some Jamar Taylor. I'm not going to lie. I wanted Jamar Taylor to eventually take over for Courtland Finnegan last year, and in what little time he did get to play, he did pretty well. Unfortunately, he got hurt again because that's like the one thing that Jamar Taylor does not have going for him is, again, his health. So Taylor has all the talent he needs. And it's interesting because I listened to I forget who it was who said, I'm not sure if it was O.J. McDuffie or Sam Madison, and it was on the Finsiders. He said that if you don't hear a cornerback's name called during camp and stuff, that's actually a good thing because that means they're doing their job. Usually when you hear that a cornerback did something, it's either because they made an incredible interception that's like made a big bonus kind of a thing, or they got beat really badly, and obviously you never want to hear that. I have not heard since OTAs that Jamar Taylor has gotten beat. And the only times they had said that really was because they had mentioned that Taylor had stopped running early, and he recently came, and he came out later on and said that the reason I was stopping early is because I didn't want to hit anyone.
Yeah, he didn't want to make contact, and I forget who the receiver was, but I know exactly the player you're talking about. He didn't want to collide with him in the air because it's OTAs, there's no pads, so he backed off.
So he backed off. Now, in training camp, I expect Taylor to go all out because he wants to prove that after all this time, yes, I can be a starting cornerback. Let me get my shot. Finnegan managed to beat him out last year because he's a veteran corner. He knows his stuff. And this is what I'll always be grateful to Courtland Finnegan for this. He went out of his way to teach Taylor and Davis how to play corner. I understand that his body may have been breaking down, but you know what? Your mind never goes away. That's the same argument again with Peyton Manning. His arm is pretty much gone. There's nothing left of Peyton Manning's arm, pretty much. But he's still in the game because he knows how to think. He's practically a computer on the football field. He knows what he's doing, and he knows what to do at certain points. Finnegan taught Taylor and Davis, look, here's how you do this, here's how you do that. And both Taylor and Davis have said that they have learned. They learned a lot from having Courtland Finnegan around. People want to say that Brent Grimes is the leader. I'm not so convinced that Brent Grimes really is a leader.
No, I honestly don't think he is at all. That's my personal opinion.
I've met with Grimes a couple of times. He's very quiet. He keeps to himself pretty much. He's not into talking all that much. So but Finnegan is a different story. Finnegan was able to teach Taylor and Davis. He went out of his way to put them under his wing and teach them, look, here's how you play corner. As a football player, there was no contest. It was Brent Grimes who was the better guy. But as a teacher, as a leader, again, no contest. But this time, it was Finnegan. Now, Taylor can take what he's learned from Finnegan and his natural talents and use them to show, look, I can be a starting corner in this league. Just give me a shot. He has all the talent in the world. He just needs to stop getting hurt. And I think Jamar Taylor is going to come out this season and prove that he can do it.
Yeah, I mean, when he came out, he was first round talent, but obviously dropped to the second round because of the health issues. But he has to stay on the field. So let's say he does struggle to stay on the field. How are you feeling about either Davis, or even though we feel like Bryce McCain is more of a nickel, him playing the outside, or then you're really looking at Bobby McCain or Lippitt's really more of a project, even though he's looking good in camp. What are your thoughts behind Taylor?
I don't like to say this because I've met Will Davis several times. He's like the nicest guy in the world. He'll chat up with you. He'll talk soccer with you. He'll talk whatever you want. He's an awesome dude, an awesome character. But he struggles playing cornerback. And I had mentioned a few times I wanted to toy with the idea of him playing safety, like in a sort of Rashad Jones role, because what he's really good at is jumping routes and being a ball hawk. That's what Rashad Jones does. The only issue with that is that Davis is not big enough to handle that kind of a beating. Davis does not turn well. He has bad hips. He's not that great. And a lot of people are speculating, and I'm starting to get on board with this as well, is that I'm not sure if Davis will even make the roster when it all comes down to it.
Because I've heard that too. I hate to hear that though, because I like Davis. I think he's aggressive. I like aggressive.
That's the ball hawk in him. He's doing a lot of. He does a lot of good things in camp, but when the game comes on, it's like suddenly that's not there anymore. So I don't know what to expect from Davis. Hopefully, he starts to learn how to be more. And again, there's the word again. Well-rounded. He's really good at one thing, but he struggles in everything else. And as such, he's a liability in certain situations rather than an asset. Now, if we're going to talk about Bryce McCain and Bobby McCain, I'm hearing a lot of good things about Bobby, and he supposedly is going to be able to do a lot of stuff moving forward. And Bryce is a nickel guy who supposedly can play the boundary, but I haven't heard him be on the boundary yet or do anything. So, again, it really comes down to I need to be able to see it in person. I still expect Jamar Taylor to win the job, but if he gets beat down, I guess the obvious choice is going to wind up being Bryce McCain because he's the most experienced guy out there, and you need a guy with experience to be able to go out there. Davis does not have that much. When he has played, he struggled. Of course, I don't know if I should attribute that to the fact that he was trying to stop Sammy Watkins, who was considered to be a really, really good wide receiver. So I like Davis as a guy, as a person. He's an awesome individual. I wish I could talk to him more. But as a cornerback, he leaves a lot to be desired. And I think that behind Taylor, there might be a couple of issues, but again, I don't know how big of an impact that will have because, once again, the Sue effect. How much of an effect is Sue going to have on the whole defense? Obviously, it makes everybody better because quarterbacks are going to be rushing their throws, making mistakes, because you're going to have both Cam Wake and Ndamukong Suh in your face on every play. And if it's not one of them, then Olivier Vernon's coming around the corner. So it comes to the point where how much are you looking at everything as a personal individual evaluation? If we're talking just individuals, then there's a serious problem. But if we're talking as a defense, I'm not really all that concerned as long as Wake, Sue, and Vernon are healthy.
Okay. If, say, Bryce goes to the outside, who would you see in the nickel?
I'm going to go with Bobby because what we're hearing is that Bobby McCain is really doing pretty well. He's not getting beat all that badly. And I think the Dolphins view Tony Lippett as more of a boundary guy, so I don't think they're going to try and mess with him too much. So if Lippett is really their project guy and he's going to be their they're aiming for him to be a starting corner next year or maybe a couple of years from now, which he's – is it raining over there, bro?
Yes, you heard that? I didn't know if that was going to come through or not. Yeah, we just had a couple cracks of thunder.
It's hard not to hear it. It's like, like, okay, there's bombing going on. Air raid. Okay, Lippitt, I'm guessing, is going to be a boundary guy eventually, and he's showing a lot of good stuff, but again, he's like on the third team right now. They're not giving him too much to fight with, but he's showing a lot of good things, and so is Bobby, for that matter. And that's the biggest reason why people are questioning whether Will Davis is going to make the roster or not. It's not because, oh, we have too many cornerbacks now. It's a matter of Davis is not standing out as opposed to these other guys who we just drafted. So if the competition that they're up against right now is either Davis or these other guys because they're younger and have more upside potentially, then I'm going to go with Bobby McCain simply because he seems to be the next man up. I'm not sure if Zach Bauman's going to make the roster. He's another candidate to be the other guy.
I keep forgetting about him. I just keep totally forgetting he's even on the team. Maybe like you said, though, because we haven't heard his name, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
If he makes the team, it's likely because he's a special teamer gunner kind of a guy. But I think he could do that. I'm not sure how well he does on the boundary. He did some good things on the boundary for the New York Giants, and then he did some really bad stuff in the boundary for the New York Giants. So I see Bauman as a not as good version as Cortland Finnegan simply because he doesn't have that elite pedigree to go with him. Finnegan used to be an elite cornerback in the league. He was physical and he drove people nuts. I loved how he tortured Brandon Marshall all over again in the Bears game last year. So I don't think Bauman has the brain power. I guess that's the term I can use, is that he's not as smart as a corner as Finnegan was. Mm-hmm. Finnegan was able to make up for his lack of physical ability by using his mind. He knew what to do with himself. I don't know if Bauman can make up for that. Maybe he's more talented physically, but he doesn't know what to do with himself that well, so he might struggle there. I think if Taylor goes down, I'm pretty confident with the idea that it's going to be McCain on the boundary and Bobby is going to be the new slot guy.
Let's talk a little bit about Tony Lippett and not necessarily where he fits in as far as does he play this, if this happens, but just the drafting of him. He really does not fit the mold of the other cornerbacks on this team, the zone guys. It was just kind of strange, and it seems like he's doing well, but he's a really big guy. He's more of a Sean Smith-type stature. How would he fit in, or how would he fit in with the scheme of this defense, if, say, he has to play, since he seems more of a press guy, not really a zone guy? What are your thoughts on that, or maybe I have it totally wrong?
Well, if we're going to look at it by just his size, then yes, I would have to agree he seems to fit more of a press kind of an idea. But let's look at it like this as well, though. He Mike Tannenbaum came from the New York Jets mentality. The New York Jets loved their press corners. They had Darrelle Revis, Antonio Cromartie, Dee Milliner. Those are guys that Tannenbaum really likes. And we've long since realized that the guy in charge and for the Miami Dolphins is not Dennis Hickey. It is actually Mike Tannenbaum who is making the final decisions on things. Hickey's the one doing the talent evaluation and saying, look, man, here, this guy's really good. Let's see if we can bring him in. And Tannenbaum can either say yes or no. So I think Tannenbaum had a lot to do with the Tony Lippett draft pick. And maybe they are – and I hate to sound like I'm foreboding, but maybe they're preparing for the departure of Kevin Coyle, who likes to use the zone coverage. I've heard a lot of reports that it's not necessarily Coyle who decides where the cornerbacks line up. That's more on the corners themselves.
Yeah, I actually heard that in the last couple of days, that they decide, not Coyle.
Right, so if that is the case, then – Lippett seems like a more physical guy, and that's perfectly fine with me. I get tired of seeing guys 10 yards off the ball. So if Lippett wants to get up close and personal with his receiver, I don't have a problem with it, as long as he doesn't wind up violating that whole stupid five-yard rule that people, I figure, will take advantage of to no end. I mean, I've always had this thought process of, well, if by 5 yards you're not allowed to touch your guy anymore, then really what's stopping you from making an easy catch every time? So, or at least at the very least, drawing a penalty because, oh, this guy poked me in the wrong place after 5 yards. So, maybe Lippett can learn how to play zone. And if he does, then we're going to have one of those big corners that we need moving up forward. Because as much as I love Brent Grimes as a football player, he's not that big. He's not physically impressive or anything like that. He knows how to jump like nobody's business, but he is going to start getting older and eventually, Father Time's going to catch up with him. It hasn't caught up with him totally just yet, but it looks like, and I have to say, it looks like that it's starting to take a hold. Plus, there's the whole idea of he's going to be making a lot of money next season. And truth be told, the biggest reason people want Grimes to go is not even about the money or his play. It's more along the lines of who he associates himself with and who he allows to talk for him. So I don't see Grimes making a pass next year, and maybe that's why they brought in a guy like Tony Lippett to work on as a project this season, because they're getting ready to move on from him.
Yeah, I think if you look at just our cap situation for next year, how much money we have promised to how many guys, he could definitely be I guess you could even consider it a cap casualty, if nothing else. I could definitely see that, man. Hey, let's talk a little bit about quarterback Tannehill, the Tannehill contract. I haven't talked much about the contract itself. What do you think about that contract for Tannehill and for the Dolphins?
This contract was a steal for Miami, if you're going to ask me. I mean, he's making less than the likes of Andy Dalton and Colin Kaepernick. And I can't think of many Dolphins fans, if any at all, who would take Dalton and Kaepernick over Tannehill.
Except for the fact that Dalton's gone to the playoffs like 3 years in a row, and Kaepernick's been all the way to the Super Bowl and the NFC Championship game twice.
Okay, I have to ask this, because depending on how you answer this question, I may have to change my approach with how I answer these next questions.
Okay.
Are you the kind of guy who feels that it's all on the quarterback and it doesn't really matter what the excuse is, the quarterback needs to lead his team to the playoffs?
Absolutely not. I'm just playing devil's advocate for the people who – I'm a huge Tannehill fan, dude. I'm sitting in my RT17 jersey right now. Don't worry about that. No, I don't feel that way. And I do feel Tannehill is more talented than Dalton for sure. Kaepernick, I don't know. I'm still not even sure about that guy, really. Either way, for him, not even putting Tannehill in the equation – I still don't know if we know everything there is about Kaepernick. Can he sit back in the pocket and play quarterback the way it's really meant to be played? I mean, okay. I know these teams are kind of playing around with a lot of different things, but it's all kind of coming back to quarterbacks are staying in the pocket and throwing the ball. That's where the success is. So I'm a huge RT17 fan, man. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, you scared me for a second. There's like, oh my god, it's a QB rating drone. Okay, let me just try and educate you here for a minute.
No, it's all good. I know what's up. I love RT17, man. I love Tannehill.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dalton and Kaepernick are not as overall are not as talented overall as Tannehill is, but they have better teams and better coaching surrounding them, so they've managed to succeed where Tannehill has failed. And of course that was and of course last year that changed for Mr. Kaepernick because his team suddenly dropped off the grid for him, so he had no help on the offensive line just like Tannehill, and he flopped under the pressure. His gunslinger mentality was not enough to keep him in the game, and honestly it made things worse for him moving forward. As for Dalton, I mean, Dalton has AJ Green, so it's kind of hard not to see him succeed because you have guys like AJ Green, and he has one of the top offensive lines in football all the time, so he has protection. So he managed to piggyback off of that. If Tannehill had Dalton's team, they'd be going to the playoffs every year too, and I firmly believe that beyond the shadow of a doubt. And he's making less than those guys. And not only that, the way the contract is structured, it rigs it so that if after 2 years they decide, well, he's not panning out the way we want him to, they can move on. Tannehill made this contract to bet on himself and say, look, thanks for some of the money. Now let me show you and prove to you that I am worthy of the money that you just gave me. And that is why when the contract was announced, Tannehill's agent came out and said, in a couple of years, we hope to be coming back for a new contract again. Because they're basically saying, this is still technically a prove-it deal. Let us prove ourselves to you. And the fact that it was structured that way, this contract is a lot more team-friendly than people are looking at, because they look at a lot of the people who say no are the people who are And I say this about them because that's usually the stat they go off of. I call them QB rating drones. They just look at the QB rating and like, well, I guess he's not any good. And all I have to do really in my mind is say, excuse me, is Ryan Fitzpatrick a top 10 quarterback?
No.
Because according to QB rating, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a top 10 quarterback. I wouldn't even put Ryan Fitzpatrick in the top 20, not even close. So it's like, really? You want to use QB rating? And that was an argument that I got into with another guy a few months ago about Nick Foles, of all people. It's like, Nick Foles is a better career QB rating than Ryan Tannehill. It's like, really? That's how you're going to twist it now? It's his career QB rating? Oh, well, excuse me. One really good year under Chip Kelly, and then the next year he fell flat on his face because LeSean McCoy stopped being LeSean McCoy. So you want to throw career QB rating out there now. All I'm looking at, if you want to look at QB rating, is that his QB rating each year has gone up. It's gotten better, as well as all of his other numbers have gotten better. He has steadily improved. He's in line now to steadily improve even more. And so I expect Tannehill to firmly earn this contract that he signed. People don't look that like that because they want the pretty deep ball. They want the QB rating to go up into the hundreds. And you know what? That's fine and dandy. But I always say that I look into the whys of why things happen. I don't look at the what and say, oh, well, that's that. I examine. I analyze. I see, why did this happen? Why is his numbers like this? So you see a lower QB rating for Tannehill, and it was going to be up over 100, but then Lamar Miller bobbled a pass, and it got intercepted for a pick six. So suddenly Tannehill's quarterback rating is not as high as it was supposed to be. So that's just – it seems like common sense, but people don't really care about that. Those are the people who are just playing off the results. Have the Dolphins made the playoffs? No. Get a new quarterback. It's really not that simple, but people want to make it seem like it is because ESPN likes to talk about the quarterbacks all the time, and ESPN caters to those people who are casual fans. They're not like you and me who analyze all aspects. They just want to say, well, it's easier to just say this, so let's just say this. I expect Tannehill to firmly earn that contract. I expect him to show what he can do. And if he somehow manages to get an offensive line in front of him, then the sky is not even the limit. I think he can be an elite quarterback if he gets protection. If he's not getting any protection, then maybe he can fight his way into the top 10.
Yeah, I could see him definitely as a top 10 quarterback this year. What are your thoughts? And you had said something about the QB rating, the numbers, so it kind of made me think of this. There was this article recently, There's been a lot of debate of how much of this article was driven by Pro Football Focus numbers versus what was driven by ESPN analytics. This article that has the Dolphins roster as the bottom in the AFC East, just what's your reaction to that, man? Because mine's visceral. I just don't get it. I don't understand what they're analyzing.
I honestly did not read the article. I didn't even want to give it the time of day because I don't know what these people are looking at that they decide that they don't have that they have one of the worst rosters in the league. I mean, what are you looking at? Are you looking at the fact that there's no proven veterans on the team? Well, I can understand that, but it doesn't mean these players are bad. If you want to look at the fact that they haven't made the playoffs, okay, fine. I understand that, but that doesn't mean the players are not good. If they're looking, Pro Football Focus is pretty much all numbers. They don't necessarily watch the film and say, well, based on what I have seen, it's this, this, and this. They take what they see and try to attribute numbers to it. And I guess this is why people don't like to use Pro Football Focus all the time, because they kind of pick and choose when to use their numbers. But if really what you're saying is that they decided that they sucked pretty much and they still suck now, then I would have to say, once again, are you even looking at the Dolphins, or do you even know half the players' names? Because that was always the biggest pet peeve of mine for ESPN and guys like that, is that whenever they were forced to talk about the Dolphins, it was usually because it was a bad thing. Like, they didn't bring up the Dolphins until Richie Incognito did all this stuff and Jonathan Martin bullying scandal and all that nasty, nasty stuff. So it's like every time they talk about the Dolphins, it's because, oops, the Dolphins screwed up again. But they'll talk about every other team in the NFL and say how they're on the rise, they've made a great move, not so for the Dolphins. But again, you don't even know half the players' names. You don't know what they do. You've never watched them play. You don't care about them playing. So how can you make a judgment based off of that? I don't know what they're basing their stats off of. I don't know what they're basing their analysis off of. But for them to say that the Dolphins have one of the worst rosters in the league, I just have to shake my head at that and think, what are you thinking? Have you looked at the Raiders? Have you looked at the Jaguars? Have you looked at all these other teams that are failing right now? Why not the Redskins? Why do they not have a really bad roster? What about the Patriots? They lost a lot of players in their secondary. Are you saying they have a really good roster just because they still have Brady and Gronk? That's not enough. So I guess if those people are Mike Wallace truthers, maybe that's why they decided to drop us so low. But once again, that basically comes into personal bias. We don't care what the facts say. We just want to say what we want to say. And those are the kinds of people that I consider QB rating drones as well.
Yeah, I would say from watching, and we've all done it for years, I've watched a lot of ESPN, a lot of NFL Network. I've started to learn, and as there's one team I follow, one team I know in and out, and that's the Miami Dolphins. So anytime I see somebody start to try and analyze maybe what we need in the draft or what have you, I'm always looking at these analysts that I feel, okay, he does know the players, and he does understand what's going on. And then I'll listen to these others, and you can tell they just have no clue. They are seeing it fully, you know, on the surface. They can name Tannehill and a couple other guys. Lewis Riddick is actually one that I feel actually knows the Dolphins, and there's a few others, and I've never heard those guys sit there and say, oh, the Dolphins aren't a good team. Quite the opposite. They actually like the Dolphins. So if you pay attention to the ones who actually know the rosters, they have good things to say about the team. It just annoys me when they put out crap like that. And it's just crap. That's just all it is. It's just to get a rise. It's to get a bunch of clicks. I don't know. I'm not sure what it's for. It just gets me mad.
Did you say Lewis Riddick?
Yes.
The same Lewis Riddick who recently came out and basically said that Tannehill's not worth the contract he just signed because they haven't made the playoffs. That Lewis Riddick?
Yeah, but I think he's totally wrong on the Tannehill thing. Obviously, I do. But when you hear him talk about our roster and talk about a lot of our players on our roster, like, he knows our roster, he knows our team. He's wrong on the Tannehill opinion. I mean, that doesn't mean he can't be wrong. I'm not going to agree with everybody on everything. It's just a fact. I think he's totally wrong on that. I also think that for anybody who says that, they've never really looked at the contract. Honestly, because you're totally right. In 2017, that's when we'll know what's up. You know, we still kind of have almost renting him until then, and then we have the choice. Do we want Tannehill further or do we not? And then we could even re-sign him, restructure, which will still help our cap. I mean, it was, like you said, a good deal.
I understand what you said, man, but it's like I really have trouble taking people seriously when they turn around and say, well, they didn't make the playoffs, so they're not good. It's like, again, are you looking at the film? Are you looking at why? Or are you just saying, well, numbers equals this? I hate when people use numbers without having the context of the actual film to back it up. You when Tannehill makes a perfect throw to Jarvis Landry, he drops the pass and it gets picked off for pick six. That lowers his QB rating. Does that mean Tannehill messed up? No. Whose fault is that? That's Landry. I'm not saying Tannehill's blameless. Far from it. He has a lot of stuff to work on. His pocket presence, his deep ball, there's a lot of stuff he still needs to work on. But it's like, you want to attribute numbers and a win-loss record to things that they never should have been attributed to players and coaches to begin with. You try to give these guys, well, he led this team to an 8-8 record, and this guy led this team to a 7-9 record. Are you looking at what happened, or are you just saying, well, these are the numbers, so obviously this must be the case? Maybe it has nothing to do with them. People wanted to look at Mike Wall. This is the perfect example. I always have to come back to this. People wanted to look at the Tannehill-Wallace deep ball connection. Well, Tannehill couldn't hit Wallace, so obviously Tannehill can't throw the deep ball. Why is it that it seemed like every time Tannehill threw it to someone not named Wallace, and they threw like a 9 route or whatever it was, it seemed to be either complete or it fell right through the dude's hands? It doesn't seem like a coincidence to me. It's the only person that Tannehill seemed to have real issues connecting with this whole time has been Mike Wallace. His deep ball numbers before Wallace showed up were actually a lot better than when they were when he showed up, because Wallace has no catch radius. He's not good at tracking the football. He's not physical. He won't fight for it.
And he's also an inconsistent route runner. He doesn't always run that route at the same speed. He runs it faster. He runs it slower, just depending on what he wants to do.
Correct. So, but you want to look at Mike Wallace's speed. He has a 4.3 something or other, and like, wow, he's really fast. Let's get him in there. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. Sorry. You have to do the whole picture. You can't just look at one thing and say, well, obviously this dude has one elite trait, so he must be an elite player. Nope. When I think of an elite wide receiver, I think Calvin Johnson, I think Dez Bryant, AJ Green, Julio Jones. I don't think Mike Wallace. What makes Mike Wallace elite? People always would cite his numbers. He scored 10 touchdowns. Yeah? What did he score 10 touchdowns doing? Catching balls from Tannehill and catching balls that he's usually not good at catching. And even when he did catch them, it didn't look that pretty. It was ugly. It didn't look natural to him. So Wallace does one thing really well, and everything else is pretty much he's fighting his natural instincts. He knows how to run a straight line. He knows how to catch the ball if it plops right into his hands. If it doesn't, you're done. It's not going to happen. Even Big Ben Roethlisberger was starting to have trouble connecting with Wallace in Pittsburgh, and people like to try to ignore that because Big Ben is considered an elite quarterback and it's all that nice stuff. It's all about the media narrative. I get annoyed having to talk about it because it's so obvious that it happens. It's painfully obvious. I mean, you look at it and it's like, where are you getting this from? It makes no sense. So I think Tannehill is a lot better than people give him credit for. I think he's a lot better than a lot of the media gives him credit for. I wish people would stop attributing win-loss records to him and Philbin, for that matter. But it is what it is. Casual fans only want to know the box score, and they don't really look at everything else, and we have to live with that as a result.
Let's segue to Philbin, actually. How do you feel? How comfortable do you feel with Philbin as our coach going into this season and into the future?
At the end of every year, I'm usually really mad at him, and I want him fired because they failed again.
Nice.
And it's like I sound hypocritical because I said, well, I didn't want win-loss records attached to his name. Well, you know what? They lost, so. But after I take a step back and my emotions come down to a normal level again, I look at Philbin, and what I see really is I see a coach. But not in the sense that you see somebody like a Jim Harbaugh. You don't see a John Harbaugh. You don't see a Rex Ryan. And what I'm saying is that they are leaders. They know how to lead their football team. Tony Sperano was one of the greatest leaders I had ever seen. He wasn't a really good coach, but he was an elite leader, and he could get his team to fight for him in any case, in any matter. The whole idea of that coaches don't need to get their teams fired up because they're supposed to do that themselves. I mean, well, yeah, you're kind of right about that, but at the same time, they sometimes players want that guy who's going to be able to give them a rah-rah speech and give them some kind of encouragement. That's what makes players like Rex Ryan coaches like Rex Ryan and Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh, they know how to fire up their team. They know how to make them do – they know how to make them work harder. So if you want to say, is he a good coach? Is he a good teacher? Yeah, Philbin's a really good teacher. He knows how to teach his players. His players, whether they're slowly or not, they teach, they develop under his coaching. So that's pretty much a good thing. So his leadership ability, non-existent. He doesn't have a leadership ability. So I am confident with him as a teacher. I am not confident with him as a leader. People who say that he doesn't need to lead, I have to shake my head at, because even Vince Lombardi himself said that you need to be, that you can give all the X's and O's on a board and do all the coaching stuff, but what really sets apart those coaches from the best to the worst is how well can you lead your football team. Philbin's not good at leading; he's really good at teaching. Maybe that he can teach his players to be good enough that it'll overcome his lack of leadership. I don't expect that, but I think they might win in spite of his lack of leadership because of all the moves they've made this offseason.
What about the leaders in the locker room? We've had a lack of leadership in this locker room for a decent amount of time. We've added Sue. I feel like he's a leader. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I think Jennings can definitely be a leader, at least in the wide receiver room. I don't know if he's looked up to by the entire offense or the entire team. I mean, who else? Who else can be those leaders? Because obviously, if you're coach, that might have been part of our problem. We've had a coach who isn't a strong leader, and then we've lacked the locker room leadership on top of that. So where's the answer inside the locker room right now for 2015?
Okay, the leadership thing. I guess this is where I'm gonna have to go into another one of my rants, because this is another aspect that I have to shake my head at when people say it, because I cannot disagree with them enough. In this whole idea of, in order to be a leader, you need to be loud. That's the narrative that seems to be coming out lately. You need to be loud, and you need to be obnoxious, and you need to get everybody's attention with your fiery speeches. Not always. I say Philbin's not a leader because he's not good at doing either, but there are people who have the ability to be leaders by doing, not necessarily by saying. People were saying that Marcus Mariota is not a leader. So the fact of the matter is that you don't have to lead by yelling and screaming and getting people fired up. You can also lead by example. And Marcus Mariota is a really good example of that. People compared Mariota to Tannehill, not just because of the skill sets, but also because of his mannerisms, the way he carries himself. He's quiet. He's not going to look to get anybody he's not looking to give anybody a story. He's going to butter that toast with a whole bunch of nothing if you ask him something, to quote Tannehill in a Levitard interview a year ago. What he does is that he leads by example. And leadership is when your team is willing to follow you into battle. People were saying that Mariota is not a leader. He's meek. He's not loud enough. He's not flamboyant enough. He's not going to get in your face and yell at you. But I believe it was a story that was written a while ago that said that the coach, Marcus Mariota's coach, gave him two options. You can either yell at your wide receiver, or you can run 10 gassers. Mariota chose to run the gassers. And for that alone, I admire him, because I have to look at it like this. Well, why do you want Mariota to yell at him? Did he do something that he wasn't supposed to? Did he mess up somewhere? if he didn't, then why are you telling him to yell? Just so you can, for the sake of having him yell? I'd rather run the 10 gaspers myself. I don't want to yell at him for no reason. What did he do wrong? He didn't deserve that. And now this is where it comes into being the true leader. The fact that Mariota chose to run the gassers over the yelling part, he went and ran the gassers. But you know what? Following his example, his teammates went out on their of their own choice, and they ran the gassers with him. That's a leader. A leader is somebody who will be followed when he's doing when he does something. If you decide to run ahead and try to get people to follow you, and nobody follows you, are you a leader or are you just a fool? If nobody's following you, you're not a leader. You're just a loud, obnoxious dude who just people everybody stares at and think, what the heck's the matter with him? If you go do something and people follow you into doing it, like Mariota's teammates did, then you're a leader. They are willing to follow you into battle. You don't have to say anything. They will follow your example, and that is what makes a leader. And Ndamukong Suh is not very loud. He's not very he's not going to get in your face. He's not going to scream and yell at you unless it's on the football field, because that's when the second version of Ndamukong Suh comes out and he's going to stomp on his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in the locker room? No. He keeps to himself. He minds his own business, and he does his own thing, but he works like nobody else in that locker room. And honestly, I guess you can't really say that, because a lot of people. Tannehill works like no one else does. Landry works like no one else does.
Billy Turner works
like no one else does. It's those kind of people that I see as more leader than people, the so-called leaders of yesteryear, like Mike Wallace, could ever be. Wallace was definitely loud. Wallace was definitely obnoxious. Wallace was not content with where the team was going. And the last part I can understand. I would not be content with where the team was either. But how do you handle it? What are you doing to make it better? You're throwing your quarterback under the bus, pretty much. That's what you're doing. That's not being a leader. That's being a locker room cancer. Instead of making the team rally together, you are basically saying, well, look, we're really good. This guy sucks, so we're doomed to start. How is that being a leader? I don't understand in any way, shape, or form how you could possibly classify someone like that as a leader. Why is he a leader? Because he's loud? That's not good enough. That means Richie Incognito was the best leader the Dolphins ever had. Like, who is going to agree with that?
Well, that was the problem. That's why Bullygate happened. We didn't have real leaders, whether they were quiet or boisterous or not. We had no real leaders. And what happens when you don't have leaders? You know who becomes the leader? The loudest mouth. And bottom line, the loudest guy becomes the leader. And that was the worst situation for the Dolphins. As far as the Dolphins concerned, I see Pouncey, Tannehill, Sue, and Delmas.
Delmas is a leader.
I'd see those guys being, and I see that as positive leaders, not loudmouth, not, I don't want to use the word bully because I don't like using that word anymore, but I don't see them as guys that are kind of pushing guys around and making them do things, but they work hard, they lead by example, they're liked by their teammates, and I feel like Tannehill's a lot more liked by the teammates because they've pretty much gotten rid of most of the people on the offensive side of the ball anyway that aren't pro Tannehill. Pretty much, if you're not with our quarterback, then we're not with you, goodbye. And it's really what this offseason has been about, honestly, is getting people that are behind Tannehill and want to move forward with him.
All those people who didn't like Tannehill were people who wanted to get their stats higher. I will never forget the first game that Wallace ever played with the Dolphins. And that pretty much set my mentality towards Wallace the rest of the way. He was mad after the team won. You beat the Cleveland Browns pretty handily. Why are you upset? The only possible option was that you didn't get the ball enough. He only made like one catch that whole game. But they won like 31 to something. So it's like, why are you mad? It's because he didn't get his individual accomplishments in. Those are the kinds of guys. That was Gibson's problem. That was Hartline's problem after he got weeded out of the league of the offense because Landry had pretty much taken most of the catches. That was Landry. I think Landry was a bigger problem for everybody than Tannehill was, because Landry is this wet behind the ears rookie who's taking all of their catches away from them. And Tannehill and Landry had really good chemistry. So it's like, hey, what about us? We're supposed to be the stars of this offense. Throw us the ball. No, he's more comfortable with Landry. Sorry.
Well, so, Landry ran the routes that Tannehill threw the best.
Right. So that's Tannehill. So they have a good connection. They work well. They know how to do things. So, and not to mention the fact that Landry himself is very fiery on his own. He knows how to get him. He knows how to get people hyped up. And I think that he might be able to take that loud leadership role, but in a positive way. He's not going out to make sure that people are saying, look, I'm the best around here and you all going to have to listen to me first. That's not how being a leader is. That's just, that's being a bully, but that's not being a leader. That's just being the guy who's loud and obnoxious. If nobody, you can get people to like you if you're a bully, but those are going to be the people who in their heart of hearts agree with you that they don't like their quarterback. Even now, I'm sure there are people in that locker room who don't like Tannehill.
On the defensive side?
I think more
on the defensive side.
Well, more on the defensive side maybe, but even on the offense, I'm sure there are people in there who still don't like Tannehill. But you know what? The atmosphere has changed. It's the guy who was legitimizing the need to complain is gone now. Wallace was the linchpin behind the whole offense suddenly having this big, loud, obnoxious issue with Tannehill. Everybody was upset with Tannehill, and it was all somehow stemming back to the fact that Wallace couldn't get his deep shots in. I'm sure there are guys in there now who still don't like Tannehill, but the difference is now the atmosphere of the locker room has changed. Now it's not, well, I don't like Tannehill, so I'm going to complain and be mad about it. No, now it's, well, Tannehill's not really good at it. Let me improve myself so I can make sure that this team succeeds as a whole. The mentality of why you don't like, of what you're going to do with the fact that you don't like Tannehill has changed. Greg Jennings, I'm sure, is going to be a really good leader. He's a veteran presence. He knows what he's doing. He's good friends with Philbin, so maybe he can be Philbin's voice or something. I don't know. I've met Delmas a couple of times. I had lunch with the man at the Miami Dolphins kickoff luncheon. He is an incredible individual, and I wish more people would get to know him. I wish he was on Twitter, but he's not. He told me recently that those two accounts are not him, so those are fake accounts. So if anybody's following those two Delmas accounts, don't. They're not him. You're being fooled.
Well, most of those accounts are verified for the most part. I don't think those are verified.
I told him, no, there was one Delmas account that I told him, hey, dude, there's this guy who's verified. And he's like, no, that's not me. I've never been on Twitter. It's like, whoa, okay then. Well then. Let me unfollow him.
That's embarrassing, especially if, you know, hey, want to come on the show sometime? I'd like to do an R. Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I'd like to do an interview?
It's like, yeah, sure, why not? It's like, you're not him. I know, Delmas, you're not him. Yeah. It's like, surprise, that's not him. But in any case, Tannehill, yes, leads by example. Landry, loud, but he also leads by example. Sue leads by example. Wake leads by example. There's a lot of leaders in that locker room now, but it's like, I don't know how much leadership really handles, because if you have one really, really, really bad egg, putting in a whole bunch of good eggs doesn't make it any better. Because no matter how many good leaders you have, unless you have somebody who's better and that person has to respect, then it's not going to help. They're just going to keep being loud and obnoxious. Wallace didn't respect anybody but Wallace. So it didn't really matter who was in that locker room. What were they gonna be able to tell him? Hey, shut up already, you're making problems? Well, what's in it for him to shut up? He has no reason to shut up. He's just gonna be loud because he wants to be loud. One really bad egg can really kill everything. There's a reason that Terrell Owens was called Team Obliterator. It's because
because Skip Bayless came up with that, right?
Well, okay, well, whoever came up with it, I guess it's true, because everywhere Terrell Owens went, there seemed to be a locker room divide.
That's true.
Does that mean that the team suddenly did not have leaders, or was it because there was one really bad egg who just wanted to complain?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Well, hopefully everybody's on board with what the team's doing, the direction they're headed with the quarterback, or at least if they're not, they're going to keep their mouth shut about it.
Wallace was the most vocal with his displeasure.
But it was all about his own personal statistics. Right. It had nothing to do with how successful the team was. I don't know that he even cared.
I don't know if he cared either. And I keep harking back to his first game as a Dolphin. They beat the Browns easy. He got one catch, and he walked away upset. That that was a red flag immediately, and it continued and continued as long as he was there.
Well, isn't that the difference between the way Ireland builds a team and Hickey builds a team? Well, as far as just talent, this guy's talented, let's just put him on the team, regardless of how it really fits.
Well, I'm not going to poop on Ireland anymore because he did bring in a lot of good players for us. He did miss a lot more than he hit, but when he hit pretty big. Because, I mean, hey, it wasn't Hickey that drafted Ryan Tannehill.
No, that's true. It was Ireland, and Ireland was scouting him well before. Like, he was going to watch him. He wanted Ireland. He wanted Tannehill from the beginning. It was, that was a good draft pick. But there.
So Mike Pouncey, Charles Clay, all those guys, those were Ireland picks. Olivier Vernon, I think Cameron Wake had something. I think it was Cameron Wake, Ireland. I don't know how much of it was Bill Parcells.
Yeah, how much of it was Parcells versus Ireland? Yeah, but when you think Ireland, you think the 2013 offseason, and pretty much that's just been erased by Tannenbaum.
Grimes was a good move.
Oh, yeah, Grimes was definitely a good move. We needed to do that for sure. Now, I'm not going to say he made all bad picks, but he would put players in regardless of fit. Just because he thought they were talented or he thought they had physical talent, and if it didn't work, it didn't work. It's just the way it was. I feel like Hickey and Tannenbaum see the big picture a little bit more about how it all kind of works together.
Right.
It just seems they pay more attention to the chemistry piece of it.
Right.
I don't think Ireland did at all. I don't think he was concerned about that or thought about that.
He just wanted to pretty much save his job, and so he spent a lot of money on guys like Ellerby and Wheeler when Burnett and Dansby, even though they were older, were actually much better. And Dansby's still doing really good. In fact, I wish Dansby would come back, but I don't think he would ever be willing to do that.
No, there's some, I guess there's beef there between him and Philbin, so I don't think that's ever going to happen.
That's never going to happen.
So if I had to put you on the spot, and I'm, you know, not on the record yet, just on the spot as far as the Dolphins' record this year, what do you see?
With an average O-line, like not even good one, just average. It's like Turner manages to do well, and I don't care if Thomas sucks anymore. Because it's just an average O-line. Just don't be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not even terrible, then at least 10-6.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So in this scenario, I'll give you that they sign somebody at guard. Not necessarily Mathis, because I personally think we're not going to get Mathis.
I don't think so either.
I think he's out there for the money. You know, period in the story, he's out there for bigger money. But like you mentioned Moffitt, you mentioned Long, and maybe there's a guy or two out there we don't know. Let's just assume they bring in one other guard. You still see 10 wins, maybe better?
If they have at least an average offensive line, they'll be 10-6, at least. The Dolphins have built their offense around Tannehill rather than trying to force him into something he's not good at. All the reports are that Tannehill is having his best practices ever, and it's because he's brought in weapons that fit what he does. They're not trying to put the square peg in the round hole anymore. They've finally decided that, oh, the circle peg goes in the circle hole. Oh, it all makes sense now. So now they brought in weapons that work with Tannehill rather than go against what he can do.
That goes right into what I was just saying about the difference between Ireland and Hickey.
Right.
That's just what I was saying. Yeah, I agree. 10 wins as well. So 10 wins gets us into the playoffs most of the times it does.
Well, wild card for sure.
Yeah, wild card.
They're not going to win the division because Brady and Belichick.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. But I agree. I get so tired of those. Now
I'm tired of those too.
With a defense like ours can be, because I think we have the chances for an elite defense, how far could that defense take us into the playoffs? Because defense means a lot when you get into the playoffs.
Well, if we're going against somebody like the Bengals, then I think we can get past that first round. But if we have to run into somebody like Baltimore or maybe Pittsburgh or somebody like that, then maybe we might run into a couple of problems. We have no problem beating Cincinnati. But Pittsburgh and Baltimore like to push us around a lot.
We play Indy very well, but we've played Pittsburgh stronger of late in the past, say, 3-4 years. We struggle with Baltimore. Baltimore is the thorn in our side.
Baltimore won't go away. We got to play Baltimore again this year. We play Baltimore every single year. It feels like they bring in this the Dolphins are doing too well. Throw Baltimore at them. It's like, oh, come on. Well,
it's just believe it or not, it's just actually pure luck from the way they rotate the schedule. We're going to play them once every 3 years anyway, and then the other 2 years, if we finish in our division the same place they finish in their division, we play them. That's the way it works.
Baltimore finished third? I thought they finished higher than that.
No, they finished right where we finished. They finished third because Cincinnati and Pittsburgh finished first and second.
Wow.
So it just kind of bad luck. It's the same reason why the Colts and New England play each other every single year. They always finish first in their division, except for 2008. When we finished first, they finished second. But guess what? Indy finished second because Tennessee was 13-3 that year. It was just that one weird off year. So again, the next year, the Colts and New England play. Yeah, the schedule's pretty much, once the regular season is done, you can look and you know every single team everyone's going to play. You just don't know when and whether home or away. But that's just, it's just bad luck, man. We just keep getting bad luck with having to play Baltimore. But we need to learn how to beat those guys. They're very physical. We need to learn how to be physical with them.
Well, that's what we're trying to build toward with the defense, right? Being more physical defense. We're still a finesse offense, and as long as Philbin's around, we're going to be a finesse offense. But it seems that the defense is starting to take on the extra nastiness that maybe we needed before.
So, can we be successful with a finesse offense but a physical defense? Is that, can this day's NFL, can you win a Super Bowl that way or be very successful with a real finesse offense but a real physical defense?
Why not? I don't see why not.
I don't,
the defense
I don't
and the
either.
Offense don't. The defense and the offense aren't necessarily connected in that way. You don't have to be a finesse defense and a finesse offense, or power defense and power offense. Why? They don't have. They don't. One has nothing to do with the other. If you want to be a if you want to be a bruising defense, then by all means, it's not the only thing. The only time that matters is when you're going to be practicing against each other. So, against other teams, it's like, yeah, beat up on them when you're on defense, and then air out the ball on offense. What's the big deal? I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I agree. I was just wondering your thoughts on that, because I don't know if a lot of teams have that identity, though. Usually you see they're a finesse team all the way around, or they're a physical team all the way around. It seems like our team is two totally different offense versus defense, just the way it's building right now.
And I don't have a problem with that. If we want to become a hybrid team, that's fine with me. If you want to be finesse offense and power defense, I have no issue with that. I'd rather have the power defense, because those are the defenses that get by in the Super Bowl, like the Seattle Seahawks. And I again, if they had just run the ball with Marshawn Lynch, well, we wouldn't be talking about Brady's fourth ring.
I agree. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. I appreciate. Actually, Lewis, before I let you go, did you want to talk a little bit more about FinManiacs or maybe your podcast? I know you have a podcast as well. We want to talk a little bit more about that before we wrap up.
Well, I'm hoping to have a show going on. If since this isn't a live show, it's not going to probably be tonight. So we do live. We're hoping to get back to doing our live shows. So you guys can keep an eye out for that. I'm going to be at training camp. I'm going to be giving live tweeting updates, hopefully. I try to tweet. I'm channeling Elmer Fudd here for a minute. I've been talking for an hour and a half. So I'm going to hopefully tweet everything that happens. I try to keep an eye on everything that happens and then pretty much tweet everything that happens. So it's not like, oh, you guys get the highlights. I try to tweet everything. So if you guys keep an eye out for that in the coming weeks, I'm going to be at training camp. I'm going to be keeping an eye on what's going on. And keep an eye on for FinManiacs for all the latest news, because we're constantly updating the website. We're constantly making sure that we have all the latest news up. In fact, I'm probably going to go and write an article right now. So I have stuff to do.
Do we have a sneak peek of what that article might be about, or you hadn't decided yet?
I wanted to write a column about the importance of context, because a lot of people, because if you recall the narrative about Donnell Ellerbe taking a shot at the Dolphins, when truth be told, he even came out and said, I didn't say that the Dolphins were bad, I just said I liked playing for the Saints, because all he was doing was saying positive stuff, and it got twisted around into becoming, well, if the Saints are good, that means the Dolphins were bad. So I'm going to be writing a column about the importance of keeping the context, because if he doesn't, then because if you don't keep the context, then what are you? You're just lying about what the person said.
That's true. I understand. All right, everybody. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you tuning in. If you would like to tweet the show, you may do that at UnsquishTheFish, or email the show at unsquishthefish@gmail.com. I have another show going on next week as well. I'll be bringing on my friend Keith. He'll be back for another episode. I know you guys, a few people have been asking about him. So he's still living in Tennessee, unfortunately. He's trying to get back to Florida. But we'll be doing another show as well. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.